The narcissistic relationship begins just like any other, with the standard phases of initial attraction, infatuation, and eventually falling in love. But what type of person does a narcissist actually go for? Well, there's no one single type that a narcissist typically goes for, technically. I mean, there are no parallels to be drawn among the partners of narcissists if we're talking about height, weight, eye color, race, or any other physical or cultural characteristic. While there seems to be no ideal or standard mate, friend, spouse, etc. for a narcissist, there are certain similarities about the relationships that we can point out, certain parallels. For example, the narcissist typically begins any new relationship with sort of a honeymoon period, during which everything seems perfect, almost too good to be true. Living in a relationship with a narcissist can be everything from exciting and exhilarating to soul-sucking and traumatic. And it's usually one extreme or the other, depending on what day it happens to be. You might compare it to a type of emotional roller coaster. And a narcissist cannot exist without someone to adore, someone who will submit to their will, someone to be available at their whim, and willing to disparage him or herself for their benefit. The narcissist's entire identity really depends on it. It's called narcissistic supply. Red flag number one, they throw out the L word a little too quickly. It's easy to get caught up in the manipulative web of a narcissist, especially when they're on their best behavior, putting you on a pedestal and idealizing you. That is almost certainly where they're going to be early in the relationship. They'll say, "I love you," really quickly, or they'll tell you it was love at first sight. This is often also the time they'll employ the whole love bombing technique, in which you start to get that soulmate vibe. They'll start to seem like the person you've been searching for your whole life. It will seem too good to be true, because sadly it is in this case. Red flag number two, they're a little too concerned for your personal well-being. Many narcissists are prone to making their romantic partners very dependent on them. They accomplish this by doing things for you, like cooking or cleaning or changing your oil, little chores, things like that, or through controlling your daily activities and even monitoring them. Early in a relationship, this could seem like genuine concern, but if you stick around, it'll turn into something very sinister. See, they want to put you in this place where they become so important in your life that you literally just can't leave them, can't let go of them, even if you want to. Then they like to control you with threats of abandonment and fear. And of course, abandonment is a basic human fear, so we all have it a little bit. And those of us who are raised by toxic people, it's even worse. Red flag number three, they want every second of your time. They're so in love with you so fast, and they just want to take so much of your time. The narcissist just cannot get enough of you, and they're not afraid to say it in the beginning. It starts with constant texts or phone calls, and before you know it, they can't stand to be away from you. They start to expect to spend time with you when they want it, and they get moody or distant if you can't be there with them when they demand it. Well, this leads me to the next red flag, of course, which is number four. They get angry when you can't see or spend time with them. You might start to feel worried about how you're going to avoid upsetting the narcissist, I mean the person you're dating, when you have other plans. So you might even stop making plans without talking to them first. This is just one more way they start to weave that web of control very early in the relationship. What first appears to be the loving desire to be together is really just the narcissist's need to control every aspect of your life. It's healthy to have friends and connections outside of your relationship with your significant other, and you should. If you give in to the need to please a narcissist and you go ahead and you wait for them to tell you what you're doing, when you're doing, etc., you're going to do yourself a huge disservice. Why? Because you're just handing over more control of you and your choices. Narcissists use their anger and your fear of being alone as a way to control your time. This, of course, can lead to them isolating you entirely from others in the future, so be careful. This brings me to red flag number five. They are extremely or excessively critical of other people in their own life. See, a narcissist often shocks you with their extreme criticisms of the people in their life. Whether it's their parents or siblings or friends or neighbors or coworkers, they've always got strong opinions about everyone and how worthy they are. And believe me, no one's immune to this. You'll find out soon enough if you haven't already. Now, if they have kids or they're involved with kids in any way, you'll see the narcissist become very controlling and critical of the kids too, alternating with seeing them as perfect reflections of themselves. Interesting, right? They might also be critical of others' parenting choices, whether or not they're actually a parent. Of course. This can also lend a glimpse into the future. Do you want to have kids with this person? If you already do have kids, do you want them to be parenting them? How would you feel if that person criticized your mother or your best friend in this way? You've got some things to consider here, my friend, because those things will happen if you do stick around a narcissist. This brings me to red flag number six. They treat their mother like she doesn't matter, or like she can do no wrong. Now, if you happen to meet a narcissist mother or mother figure, you might notice that they are very rude to her and that they treat her with very little respect. She might not even bat an eyelash at it, or she might playfully jab them back, depending on their relationship. But this can alternate with periods of the narcissist putting their mother up on a pedestal, idealizing her, and imagining that their relationship is perfect and that she can do no wrong. And this will especially be true when you're arguing with them later, but especially if you are involved with a male narcissist, while you initially dismiss this as just how their relationship is and you start to consider it almost endearing, if you look a little closer or in hindsight, you might just catch a glimpse of how your future will look or sound if you stick around. Speaking of which, let's get to the next point. Red flag number 7, they claim to have a crazy ex. Oh yeah, we have all met someone who has a crazy ex. But when you've got a narcissist on your hands, you'll see early in the relationship that they almost always tell you some horror stories about the ex. They might say their ex cheated or verbally abused them. They might claim that their ex was physically abusive, often hitting them, or that they were emotionally abusive, constantly tormenting them. They might even say that the ex was very, very stupid, or any number of other things. In any case, you'll end up feeling sorry for this person, and that's their goal. Because when you feel that way, you're gonna find yourself doing literally anything you can to avoid being like the ex. This means that the narcissist is actually conditioning you by subtly telling you what they don't want. And by attaching emotional pain to those incidents, they set you up to be just like the ex when they do get past the initial love bombing phase, the idealization phase, and into the devalue phase. You will spend then the rest of your relationship following these unwritten rules without even realizing it. Which brings me to number 8. They point out all the things about you that are better than the ex. This seems like a good thing, right? But no, now that you know how awful the ex was, the narcissist is ready to start idealizing you and putting you up on a pedestal. They're gonna spend some time identifying everything about you that they just love, and those things are gonna be because they're so different from the ex. And you will see, you'll go out of your way to prove that you're nothing like that crazy, horrible person. It's human nature. Of course you would. So as I mentioned, the conditioning continues and the narcissist wins. You will be fully in place and set up to try to start conforming yourself to the narcissist's desires. And this, guess what? It's another way they begin to take control of you. That brings me to number 9. They've got a great sob story, and my goodness, they are not afraid to tell it. That's right. A narcissist often has a great sob story to tell, or several. Maybe their parents died when they were young, or this awful ex cheated on them, or maybe they lost everything and somehow they overcame it, or they survived an abusive childhood or some other big tragedy. Whatever the story is, you probably heard it on or around your first date. The narcissist would have pretended to open up to you, to share their deep, dark feelings. You might have totally fallen for it and then quickly developed an almost protective feeling toward that person. Now, this is where it gets kind of weird. The narcissist does this for a couple of different reasons. First, because your pity and your feeling of protectiveness gives them narcissistic supply. And worse, they want to then draw you in and make you want to take care of them. And you know what that is, right? Oh yes, it's another way the narcissist wants to control you. I know you're shocked. This brings me to my next point, red flag number 10. The narcissist remains blameless in all situations. That's right. In general, narcissists are unable to accept responsibility for anything ever for their behaviors and the effect of these behaviors on the people around them. They just don't care. Early in a relationship, they will often tell stories in which they are the innocent victim, where they're being used, abused, screwed over by someone. Yes, the narcissist loves the poor me game, also known as narcissistic injury. Since the narcissist is playing a victim, you will find yourself playing the hero once again. You'll want to protect them or take care of them by constantly reassuring them of your loyalty, honesty, dedication, devotion, etc. And guess what? The narcissist, they get a little more control of your world. Of course, as the relationship moves forward, they're going to start blaming you, and you will become their favorite new scapegoat if you stick around, so be warned. That brings me to number 11. They claim to have a whole bunch of special accomplishments. They really need you to praise them. When a narcissist is not whining about their poor little me thing and heralding their ability to survive such terrible odds and whatnot, they're probably telling you fantastic stories about themselves and their friends. Of course, at first, you love the stories and you don't realize that they're so well rehearsed and probably only half true. Over time, you'll hear the same stories again and again and again, and potentially in various iterations. And if you don't listen and act super interested and praise them appropriately, well, you can expect that they just might throw a little narcissistic rage and a little more injury your way. And my friend, this never ends. So if you're going to try to stick it out with this person, just be prepared to be forced to heap praise on them forever. Talk about emotionally exhausting. That brings me to red flag number 12. They might have substance abuse or porn addiction issues. Not all narcissists are substance abusers, and not all substance abusers are narcissists. And that's the same deal for any type of addict. But if you're dating a substance abuser or a porn addict, you might want to take a second look and peek a little deeper. Even so, you're probably not going to see this early in a relationship unless you're really watching for it. So be careful. A lot of narcissists do deal with drug and alcohol problems, as do many abuse victims, just for different reasons. A large percentage do have issues with porn addiction. Now, this might be due to the fact that they need attention or they like excess everything, or it might be because most narcissists secretly hate themselves and need to kind of numb out on the regular. Either way, it's a red flag and an indication that the person you're dating is quite toxic. Which brings me to lucky number 13. They somehow always bring the subject back to themselves. Me, 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 it's all about me. The narcissist rarely stops singing their own praises. Now, at first, you might have even thought it was a little bit cute how self-confident they were, or they seemed anyway. But now it's kind of getting annoying. Maybe you read some dating advice somewhere that told you to make it all about that other person in the beginning, and sometimes it actually works. I mean, after all, who doesn't like to talk about themselves a little bit? But when they don't try to learn about you, or even when they just keep interrupting every story you tell with a story of their own, it's a big red flag. Now, you have to remember, narcissists are well known for their inability to listen to anything or anyone that they deem less than or unworthy of their precious attention, and they tend to wait while you speak rather than actually listen to what you're saying. They're just waiting for their turn to say whatever it is they want to say. They don't hear you and can't hear you. And often, whatever they've said doesn't actually follow the conversation because they weren't listening at all. And I hope the irony isn't lost on you when I tell you this next part, because if they don't have the opportunity to talk during a conversation or to say as much as they want, they might interject or even get upset and pout. And as the relationship goes on, they will literally start to tell you that they just don't care what you have to say and nearly require you to listen to them, even sort of quizzing you afterward to check that you were listening to them. Yes. That brings me to number 14. They are oddly and easily upset by small things. Yeah, even though the narcissist attempts to keep their childish ways under wraps during your courtship, if you look closely enough, you're going to see little signs of toxic narcissism peeking through. And one of the most obvious is that they are quickly, easily, and excessively upset about things that don't really matter to most people. For example, they might be overly rude to waiters and salespeople, or they might treat the lawn guy with contempt. They take things very personally and enact unreasonably harsh reactions. At first, you might figure it's righteous anger, right? And you go about trying to support them emotionally and provide them the love they've been missing. You think you can fix them, and you really, really try hard. Maybe for years, and in some cases, decades. But my friend, you cannot fix a narcissist. You see, while it's possible for a narcissist to change in theory, it doesn't actually happen. Ever. They don't change is the bottom line, at least not for the better. So what draws a person into a relationship like this and keeps them there? What makes a person want to stay with a narcissist? Well, most toxic relationships in general become toxic because of the codependency between two distinct personality types. The people pleaser type, or the fixer, the codependent, and the taker, or the controller, the narcissist. Now, codependents are likely to be compassionate and kind. They tend to be sacrificing and giving and focus mostly on the needs and desires of other people in their lives. They're not likely to emotionally disconnect, and in many cases, they might not even know how to emotionally disconnect. And most aren't aware that they need to avoid narcissists, at least not when they get started. And narcissists tend to be primarily selfish, self-centered, controlling, and harmful to a codependent person. Now, a codependent is likely to appreciate these differences initially, and what they first see in the narcissists as almost strengths because they're so different than the codependent. Well, this is before, of course, the narcissist has ripped off that mask and shown the ugly side or their true colors. And after that, it can get a little muddy. While physically, culturally, and otherwise, the victims of narcissism are all very different, there are certain qualities that do typically unite them. Certain things that we all kind of have in common. First, you have to be a little insecure or at least have a sort of distorted sense of reality if the narcissist is going to expect you to stick around. Otherwise, you're going to be out on the first or second exhibit of narcissism very early in the relationship. As a codependent, you might belittle yourself and demean yourself, and during the relationship, you might glorify the narcissist and put them on sort of an untouchable pedestal. Initially, this could be to combat the narcissist's apparent lack of self-esteem, if they're of the covert nature, or it might be in response to simple positive feedback from the narcissist when you do pass along this praise. As a result, the codependent person puts him or herself in the position of the victim, and that works fine for them, as they have a tendency to punish themselves. Does that ring true for you? Maybe they even seem to display a little bit of masochism in some cases, and they might even feel like they kind of deserve this life of torment. The codependent might become the narcissist's sort of eternal scapegoat, always put upon and always putting his or her own needs last. In fact, that's kind of part of how the codependent survives in a toxic relationship, by putting their own wishes, their own dreams, hopes, aspirations on the back burner in favor of the narcissist. Now, I personally recall learning to not even consider my own wants, my own needs, because my life became so much easier if the narcissist was happy. And that meant that I would need to put the narcissist's needs before my own. And it's not like I was so unusual. This is common to survivors of narcissistic abuse. Listen, victims of narcissism will often call themselves people pleasers or diplomats, like I said before. But the truth is that we are often so downtrodden in our relationships that we become changed, sort of reactive versions of our former selves. Narcissists tend to have this ideal image of what they want us to be, what they want their partners to be. And if you dare to tarnish this in any way, or to cause them to doubt it in any way, you're going to find yourself in the doghouse with the narcissist. They're also going to expect your home and your lifestyle to appear perfect, and they're going to want you and all of that to make certain statements to the people they want to impress. Because with a narcissist, it's never actually about making you, their partner, happy, or anyone else happy, safe, fulfilled. It's always about what people on the outside of the relationship think and perceive. So a lot of people ask me, can the narcissist also be a codependent then? Well, contrary to popular belief, narcissists aren't necessarily the polar opposite of a codependent. In fact, while they do appear to be completely different than their victims, like I said, polar opposites almost, they often have similar experiences and traumas to the very people they're victimizing. And this is often seen because victims of childhood abuse and/or neglect, the majority of narcissists experience something like this. And so they can identify with their victims and their own issues if only they had the empathy to do that. So what am I talking about? Well, for example, both narcissists and their victims experience certain symptoms of codependency, like the overwhelming feelings of shame, living in denial of their childhood abuse and neglect, or of their own current issues. They might have control issues or dependency on others for their self-worth. They might have issues with setting and overstepping boundaries and communication problems. Ultimately, while it does seem a little counterintuitive, narcissists are definitely codependent. They just kind of manifest it differently than we do. The difference is that narcissists seem to turn inward, while victims of narcissists tend to turn outward with the love that they normally would have given parents and other family members had they been allowed to do that. So how do you know if you are married to or in relationship with a narcissist? Well, there are 12 common behaviors that spouses and partners of narcissists tend to report. They are as follows. Number one, it feels like you're the one doing most of the work in the relationship. Number two, your partner does things to sort of sabotage the relationship and prevent it from moving forward, but they don't want to let you go either. Number three, your partner has episodes of excessive and often unjustified anger, sometimes even infidelity, and he or she somehow makes it all your fault. Number four, the relationship is mostly focused around your partner's interests and activities, and when it's not, there will be an ugly outburst or argument. Number five, you feel controlled or manipulated by your partner's moods to the point that you might feel like you're walking on eggshells all the time, like you're a servant to the narcissist's whims. Number six, you might find yourself covering up, explaining, or apologizing for their behavior. Number seven, your partner might make one-sided decisions that impact your safety and well-being. Number eight, you might feel unsafe because of some of the actions that your partner takes. Number nine, your partner will refuse to see your good intentions, always blaming you for every situation, always making you admit you're wrong, even when that's not the case. Number 10, you sometimes find yourself desperately trying to remember the times when your partner showed love for you, when they acted like you could do no wrong, as is often the case in the early parts of the relationship when the love bombing is happening. Number 11, you feel emotionally exhausted, often completely drained by how hard you have to work to make or keep your partner happy. And number 12, your partner might have a history of troubled relationships and or addictions. Between the gaslighting, the love bombing, and the flying monkeys, you end up forgetting your own identity as you desperately try to become the version of yourself that might make the narcissist happy. But even if you manage to completely change and morph yourself into the narcissist's idea of the imagined perfect person, it never matters. Here's a painful truth for you, and I hope you take it in the spirit in which it is intended. You will never be enough for a narcissist. It's a harsh reality that we all have to understand. But when it comes to the narcissist and their perception of you, you can never be enough. Even if you completely focus every bit of your energy on that person, he or she will always look somewhere else for something else, anything to increase their own supply of attention. No matter how amazing you are, and you are amazing, it will never be enough for a narcissist because it's never been about you. Don't let yourself be confused here. It is not you. You are not the problem. It's absolutely not about you. It's about the way the narcissist's convoluted mind works. And you can't take personal responsibility for the broken person you're dealing with. You just have to find a way to self-confidence and peace outside of the narcissist. The fact is that since the narcissist is so personally broken on the inside, nobody on earth is ever going to fill the endless hole of need the narcissist carries around. At least not for long. There are so many manipulation tactics that most narcissists have in common that most of their victims say reading about the abuse that they've suffered can feel like reading their own stories, even when it's my story or your story. Their tactics are underhanded and sneaky and often undetectable. And yet, these tactics can sometimes be so definable that even a child can learn to recognize them. So now that you know, where do you go from here? Well, you might feel like you're all alone when you're dealing with a narcissist in a toxic relationship. But the truth is that getting involved with these Jekyll and Hyde types is something that a lot of us go through at one time or another. Sometimes, though, we have to endure so much soul-numbing mental abuse from these people, and this type of abuse can have a powerfully and profoundly negative effect on us that can last an entire lifetime. After a painful episode of gaslighting or any number of other forms of narcissistic abuse, it's sometimes very difficult to bounce back from the mental abuse that you've had to endure. It's torture, and your self-esteem plummets because of it. Not only that, the torturous mental abuse you were subjected to by a narcissist is usually an attack on your personal character, an emotional assault committed all too often by these people. They need to make you feel worthless and insecure, but you don't always understand why. I mean, the truth is that you would be their biggest fan if they would just allow it, right? So why does a narcissist want and need to make you feel worthless and desperate? It's basic NPD 101. The narcissist's intent, whether they realize this or not, is not to gain control and boost their own ego. The narcissist wants you to have low self-esteem so you won't be able to think for yourself. In an ideal situation, when you first recognize this, that's the time to go no contact. The truth is that getting out of a toxic relationship like that is the first step you actually need to take in order to save your own sanity. But sometimes no contact isn't an option. It's not possible. So what are you supposed to do then? Well, you start planning and figuring out what you're going to do. But in the meantime, you learn how to deal with it. You learn how to get through it. So I'm going to give you a few tips right now to help you do exactly that. Now, there are some other things you're going to need to do to recover fully from the gaslighting, manipulation, and mental abuse that you are experiencing now or that you have experienced before. Remember that it's important to stay active. Now, tip number one is start by getting back to your life. So get out and do things with your family or your friends, because remember that an abuser loves to alienate you from your loved ones. Number two, keep your mind focused on other things so that you don't isolate yourself at home and become dependent on that negative person who's feeding into your self-esteem issues. I have found that focusing on what I can control as opposed to things that are beyond my control is especially helpful. You have to change your mind to change your life. Number three, call your friends, read uplifting books, or concentrate on a project like redecorating your house or a room in your house. Number four, do whatever it takes to keep going. If you have a job, continue to work and take note of your goals and achievements. If you don't have a job, maybe look for one or start your own business. Working can get your mind off of your problems and give you the necessary affirmation that you can do whatever you put your mind to. And it reminds you you're not worthless. Number five, avoid jumping into other relationships until you're fully healed emotionally. This is because you're more likely to fall for other toxic partners who are just like your ex if you're not careful. You don't want to get in the same situation as before and repeat this cycle in your life. Number six, don't waste time on thoughts about your ex, whether they're negative or positive. Some people make the mistake of spending a lot of time focused on their thoughts of how much they hate their former partner or how much they wish they could get revenge or how much they love their former partner, and none of that is helpful. Once you get through the initial few weeks or months, start focusing on yourself instead. Number seven, release the anger and focus on what's important. And that's you. Did I mention that? It's time to move forward with your life. So don't be afraid to seek some professional help. Whether you're looking for a coach or a therapist, you want someone who can help you work through your feelings and help you build your self-esteem back up. Don't let a toxic relationship break your spirit. You can get out there and you can take back your life. Now, I do offer coaching. You can go to queenbeing.com/coaches. All right, now this brings me to the question of the day. And the question of the day is, are you in a relationship with a narcissist or have you been in one before? Share your thoughts, share your ideas, share your experiences in the comments section below, and let's talk about it. As always, thank you so much for being a part of my day and a part of my life. And hey, thanks for letting me be a part of yours. It really does mean a lot to me. Now, before I go, make sure you take a look at the videos I'm leaving for you here and here. And while you're at it, hit the subscribe button so we can stay connected and continue on this healing journey together. I'll see you soon.